Welcome to the Quintessential Podcast, and thanks to our new title sponsor, Spire Academy Lacrosse. Spire is an international high school and post-grad sports performance training and education boarding school located within a world-class event and wellness complex.
Thanks for tuning in to the Quintessential Podcast. I'm Quinn Kesnick. Appreciate our listeners. If you have any feedback or guest ideas, please send me an email. It's quint.kesnick@ESPN.com. This week, we're going to be looking at some games for this weekend, some teams that we've seen, and we're bringing in a special guest. That's Dr. Nick Zaroya. Dr. Nick Z usually is our technician. He's the guy who has to work with me all week long in coordination of this podcast, behind the scenes, recording it and uploading it to the website, laxallstars.com. But he also is the play-by-play voice of the Michigan Wolverines. Dr. Nick Z, I just call him Dr. Z. He's a professor. Dr. Nick Z, what do you teach?
So most of my teaching is sport management. And just a quick correction that sometimes I do play-by-play, but most of the time I do color for Michigan. But yeah, sport management, undergrad chair of the business school at Madonna. So a little bit of everything on the business side of things, but mostly sports related.
Madonna was one of my favorites in the mid 80s. Tell me about Madonna University.
Yeah, basically it's a smaller private Catholic school in Livonia, Michigan. And it's about 2,000 students right now. And they participate in the NAIA for athletics.
Are you involved with their lacrosse team at all?
Last year I worked with the goalies and the faceoff unit, but this year strictly teaching. I might call a couple games here coming up in the spring, and most of my free time spent at the local high schools helping out.
Most of your free time is not spent with your new child?
Well, I mean, she's almost three now, so no, you know, I get a few evenings to myself to go coach some lacrosse.
So you were on site. You were the analyst for Michigan, the terrific game they played last weekend. First of all, kind of set the scene.
Yeah, so honestly, Harvard, this is always a tough game for Michigan the last couple seasons. So, you know, you know what to expect from a Jerry Byrne coach team, right? Playing with an edge, playing very disciplined defense. They're very disciplined on hands. And they definitely came out kind of on fire and had Michigan on their heels early, which, you know, Harvard's been close in a lot of games this season, and they've always come through. Michigan likewise has had very slow starts. You know, when you look at that Jacksonville game, even the Delaware game, it wasn't really clear until the fourth quarter who was going to win that. Same thing applied this week. Michigan really brought it together. There's a third quarter timeout where Coach Connery, you know, didn't do the split huddles, just called the whole team in and basically had one of those show me what you're made of type huddles. You know, this is a season defining moment for this program. And it worked to some extent because they definitely played better. But the problem was all of these windows that Michigan's had on offense to start the season, you know, they've come out and had very big offensive performances. But all of those windows were shut so quickly by Harvard's defense that they were taking, you know, maybe mediocre shots at best. They were shooting low constantly, which normally we love, but this goalie was a bit of a flopper. So he was eating those up. So, I mean, they had 55 shots to Harvard's 39, but the quality of the shots, the quality of the looks wasn't really there until probably midway through the third quarter when things started to kind of open up for them.
Let's start with Harvard, a team I got to watch in their win over Boston University. Harvard's still undefeated. And when you look at the Ivy League this year, I think it's kind of tough to slot everybody into their spots. I think one thing we know is probably Brown is on the outside looking in. Dartmouth is on the improve. But after that, between Penn, Princeton, Yale, Cornell, Harvard, it seems like it's pretty even. What stood out watching Harvard this year is they play fast. It's not always perfect. They're good on ground balls. They play with a certain energy. They play defense. It's not perfect. It doesn't look like Jerry's scheme at Notre Dame as much. But you mentioned on hands, they are disruptive. They are challenging. And I just like their overall energetic qualities. I mean, I thought they just played hard, and they're going to be a tough team to deal with. They're currently undefeated. I think they're ranked anywhere from 9 to 15, depending on the poll. And they're climbing up the ranks, and certainly they're a potential to qualify. Now they play Yale on Saturday at 1 o'clock on ESPN Plus in kind of a huge game for them, rivalry game. Plus it's their Ivy League opener. And any more takeaways, Dr. Z, about Harvard? Any personnel jump out to you? Like Sam King's a guy, I watched that game. He can do a little bit of everything. I was really impressed with his versatility, passer, shooter, feeder, playmaker off the ground. After that, they didn't really have stars that jumped out at me.
You know, I think somebody that goes underappreciated is Malone. He is a guy that immediately looked like he, you know, was going to be a game changer. Definitely challenging a lot of the matchups, an initiator, because what they do on offense, I mean, what they do across the board isn't particularly intricate, right? It's a lot of pass down, pick down, you know, dodging up the field, looking for those quick switches. But what they do is they do it quickly and they do it well. It's not these long methodical possessions, and that plays to that style that you and I were just talking about, where it's got to be fast, right? Because they don't quite have the roster that I think that Jerry really wants to have yet from top to bottom, but it's certainly getting there, right? And there's a lot of good pieces. So I think that's coming with time. And to make up for that, there are a few scheme things in there that are disruptive. And I think Malone, for sure, Teddy Malone, only a sophomore, he was all over that field on offense, taking advantage of these matchups, really getting things going. And every time they were able to get him a short stick, and he took advantage of it. And he's very quick. Ip as well, the midfielder, very, very quick feet. Again, not somebody that is going to break down a pole and completely take over the offense. But, you know, if you swing the ball real quick and Logan Ip gets it, all of a sudden, you know, he can go one way, he can go the other way, and he's just initiating and keeping the ball hot, keeping things moving. And, you know, Harvard's offense just keeps the defense on their heels. You know, once that machine gets going, it doesn't stop.
Greg Campisi was a guy who caught my eye in that BU game. Harvard struggled to win faceoffs against La Liberty, against Bryant. This is a Harvard team that made the playoffs 2 years ago, 2022. They were all freshmen and sophomores. They were super young. They were kind of exceeded expectations. And then last year, I thought they took a step backwards when we thought that they were going to contend for an Ivy League championship. So here they are 2 years later, with a more veteran roster. And I think they're very much in the mix. Again, they play Yale Saturday on ESPN Plus at 1 o'clock. In terms of Michigan, did you sense spring break being impactful here, coming off of spring break? It's something that I was talking to Clark about the other day. I always felt when I was in college, we had double sessions during spring break. Okay, we're the only people on campus. It was kind of miserable. They'd wake us up really early. We'd get up to the field at 9. We'd practice, go back for lunch, take a nap, go back to practice again at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So by the end of the week, we were pretty worn out, and we would never play well at all during spring break. Mm-hmm. But that extra time would show up down the road. Typically, we would play a peak game the week after spring break, once classes resumed again. It was a rough period, honestly. You're on campus. There's no other students there. You want to go out and do some things at night because you don't really have academic pressures hanging over you, but there's not much to do. You know, do you venture to Fells Point or Little Italy for dinner or whatever? So I just thought that it was never our best week. Michigan was coming off a trip to Florida. School mm-hmm. was back in session, correct?
Yeah. They were in class all last week, to my understanding. But yeah, there definitely could have been the hangover. I mean, they also – it was kind of an extended spring break, because even though spring break was over, you know, they just had 3 road games, 2 in Florida, 1 in Delaware. Jacksonville and Delaware games were a test, right? They weren't easy games, which is good. That's what they need. And then they come home for their first home game since, let's see here. I mean, technically, yeah, Hobart was a home game on February 17th, but even that was played at a little bit of a neutral site, not on campus. So they haven't played in their home stadium since February 13th. So it's been about a month. And, you know, I think for sure that Florida trip, that Delaware trip might have taken something out of them because they did come out a little flat. And that seems to be kind of this trend that they need to get over. You know, they have a ton of talent. They have a lot of good things going for them, but they are coming out a little flat. And you just can't do that, especially going to the Notre Dame next week. And part of the problem too was you take all that and then you throw into the mix that one of your first line midfielders is injured. So, you know, Bo Lockwood not being on the field, and he is, you know, he was Mr. Michigan lacrosse. He was an attackman last year as a man up specialist with a little bit of midfield run. And this year he is like a first line midfielder and he's doing very well. Not having him, it's like, okay, now we have to pivot again. And so I think that there were definitely guys getting runs early, trying to figure out who's going to be that next midfielder that's going to get significant run. We saw John Morgan. We saw a couple other guys. But it's curious to me what that midfield looks like moving forward and what role that plays in the Michigan offense. Because, yeah. I mean, when all your points come from the attack, it doesn't make it difficult to game plan, right?
No, you know, the shooting 2 for 25, as you pointed out, when we were texting back and forth after the game, and in total, they missed the goal 35 times. So that's kind of a good situation, a bad situation. It means you're generating offense, sufficient offense. It just means you're either not shooting well or your shots aren't coming from the hot zones that you want. Michigan now with 2 losses. They lost a game earlier in the year at Virginia. They lose to Harvard. Up next is a game I am covering on Saturday at 2 o'clock on the ACC network, Michigan and Notre Dame. And it's one of those critical Big Ten ACC games. And you look at the Big Ten, you try to figure out before conference play starts, like where's Michigan anticipated? Now that we've seen these teams, what can you tell me about the Big Ten? Let's discuss this. You know, to me, Hopkins and Penn State look like the best two teams in the league. I'd say Maryland is hovering outside that duo. Then there's Michigan, in my eyes. Then there's Ohio State. And then Rutgers at the bottom. Rutgers' non-conference schedule is atrocious. It's kind of hard to get a read on them. But I've put Michigan at 4 right now. Your thoughts?
I'd say that's completely fair. And I don't think anyone gets out of the Big Ten unscathed this season. It's probably the tightest it's ever been because even Ohio State, which, you know, from week to week is somewhere between 18 and receiving votes, right? They have kept so many good teams so close, but they don't result in wins. So they don't result in moving up the poll. So, you know, losing to 3 the other day, you know, they are good. Ohio State's a very good team. And sooner or later, they're going to get that signature victory that makes people actually wake up and see how good they are. I do think Michigan still has an edge over Ohio State. I do think Maryland, as you said, but I think Maryland is very much – I truly think that they're the second best team, but they are so inconsistent this year with how they've been playing. Like you really, I mean, I wouldn't bet a Maryland game just because you don't know what you're going to get. Hopkins more or less has been, you know, the cream of the crop. However, they've had moments too where I wonder. So I think it's any given day. I think it's a matchup issue too. Luke Weirman not playing last week. You know, that was obviously not helpful in that game for Maryland. So I think right now, as it stands, I think you got it right. I think it is Hopkins, then Penn State, then Maryland. But I think at the end of the season, it just like always, Tillman will have those guys ready. And I think they'll rise up to that second slot.
Maryland plays Virginia this weekend. Navy is at Johns Hopkins on Friday night. That's a game I'm covering with Sheehan Stanwyck Birch. It's a Friday night game. Navy at Hopkins, a rivalry that goes back to the early 1900s, I believe. 7 o'clock Friday night on ESPN+. I thought Hopkins would be vulnerable coming into this Navy game, assuming that they had won last week in Charlotte over Syracuse, but they lost. So I don't think Hopkins is vulnerable. I started watching some Navy tape last night. Their game against Lehigh put me to sleep.
It's very one-dimensional, isn't it?
It was rough. Navy Lehigh was rough. I'm going to have to go back and watch their win over BU maybe to get a better indication. It was just a sloppy game. I mean, the Navy led 3-1 at the end of the first quarter. They had 6 turnovers and were not playing well, and still led 3-1. I'm at halftime of that game right now, before I conked out. So anyone having some insomnia issues, I recommend going to ESPN Plus, plug in that Lehigh Navy game. In terms of Michigan, you know, I've got them this week. You know, we look at Army, Denver, and Hopkins returned a vast majority of their rosters this year, a huge percentage of their scoring and their overall starts. And what do you know? At the end of February, like, you look at the top of the standings, there's Army, there's Denver, and there's Hopkins. I think there are other teams now are going to reel them in a little bit. Michigan's one who benefited greatly from the transfer portal. Do you think it's taken some time for guys like Bo Pettersson at the defensive midfield, Cajal Roberts, another Princeton transfer starting on defense, Christian Ronda, who played so well last week in the second half, a midfielder from Princeton? Do you think it's taken maybe a little more time than anticipated to assimilate the transfers?
I think it's dependent on each transfer, right? So Justin Tiernan's a guy that I assume you're going to see a lot next Saturday. And he, from day one, just found his role and has done it perfectly. He's probably, and he is, in my opinion, the best player that no one's talking about, because his ability to get open on the crease, quick release, he's a big, you know, literally, usually on the crease, you get these kind of jitterbug types, the smaller attack, and they kind of flow in and out. Not Tiernan. Tiernan's a pretty big guy, and he just has this great step back, this great release, and he is their man up right now. So he came in immediately from Lehigh and has been great. Now, Christian Ronda is a guy that had a great fall, one of the three Princeton transfers, and it seemed like everything was pointing to the direction of this is going to be a big-time contributor, but it has been a little bit of a slower onboarding, and I don't know if it's a confidence thing or a scheme thing, but, you know, coming in, not knowing if he was going to be attack or mid, you know, Michigan already has a crowded attack unit, you know, returning all three guys from last year. So it was great to see, and I had mentioned it right during halftime, that he's a guy we need to see kind of step up, especially with Bo Lockwood out. And he absolutely did. I mean, he put the team on his back a few times. He had two great rollbacks, which really stressed the Harvard defense. He had a couple of great individual efforts as well, and it was great. I mean, he ended up with 4 goals, and it's exactly what we've been waiting for from the Michigan side of things, is Christian Ronda to show up. Defensively, I think having 2 transfer pulls start and a transfer D midi start against Virginia was a quick learning curve. Like, there was no time to get all that together when Virginia's the first team you play and they're going to stress every inch of the field. I think since that Virginia game, though, that defense has kind of locked down a lot more and they look really good. I mean, Cathal Roberts, I think is how you say it. He is unbelievable. And for people that haven't seen Princeton play the last couple of years, I mean, you really need to watch him play. His ability to cause chaos at the top of the box, and then once the ball's on the ground and get it upfield, really, really something to watch. So I think that's gonna be great as well. And then, you know, I think that Bo Pettersson stepped in seamlessly as D mid number one. And he's even on the second line midfield line for offense. I do think that last week he was stressed in terms of playing so much defense that they didn't have a lot of run left to give him offense. But I've seen him in games this season where in transition he stays on, or off the wing he stays on. And he's probably the best one-on-one dodger in terms of a power dodge that Michigan has, because he's that big body, he's that football athlete. So in my opinion, when the offense gets stagnant, let Bo take a run, and because he's the only guy that's going to run through or past somebody with ease, and he actually does have a cannon. So I think utilizing that would be huge, especially when, you know, we get to Notre Dame, and again, there are no slouches on defense, so they're going to be looking for midfield help. So I think, to your point, yeah, they did return almost everybody. But at the same time, with an injury, with these transfers that came in to help out, it did take a little bit of time for some more than others, but I do think at this point, you know, that's no longer a thing.
This is a Michigan team that beat Cornell in the first round of the playoffs last year and then lost a quarterfinal game. It was a second half of the season surge, though. They hadn't caught fire at this point. Michigan and Notre Dame square off on the ACC Network Saturday, 2 o'clock. I'll be calling that with Chris Cotter. And you mentioned those three Princeton transfers. Rhonda put up 32 points last year at Princeton. He scored 23 goals the year prior. I think he's a catalyst and an igniter. I think he's the guy that can draw slides. You mentioned, I got it as Cathal Roberts, born in Dublin. Lived in Ireland until he was 8 years old before moving to the West Coast and California. Second team All-Ivy, big kid. Just the way he plays, you notice him. And then Bo Pettersson's he's a gorilla at that short stick position. Like to hear they're using him more as a two-way. I think that's what he needs to work on in terms of the PLL. I believe he will be drafted in the top 15. I don't think there's any doubt. The pro coaches that I've spoken with think that he, a native of Park City, would fit well with that franchise, but that he's top one, two, or three at the position nationally. So we'll see how Michigan, when I look at the matchup with Notre Dame this week, you know, one thing that jumps out at me, you mentioned Justin Tiernan being that classic crease man. Notre Dame's got one of their own in Jake Taylor. Those guys may be the best two inside old school crease players in the country.
Yeah, and they do it. You'll see that they do it quite differently, right? Like Jake Taylor is a lot more, in my opinion, a lot more slippery, a lot more creative, more of a classic attack, a classic finisher. Tiernan looks like a guy that should be a wing attackman. Like when you just first look at him, move the ball and be out there. But then you see his uncanny ability to just show up in a window. And if that window is open, they'll find him and they'll get it to him. I mean, the entire man up is based on getting him the ball inside for a quick turn and release. And he's made a lot of – possibly a lot of money for the future just working the inside there.
Notre Dame woke up after that early season loss, a game I covered with Cotter on a Sunday. Just a terrific game plan and execution by Georgetown to win that game in overtime. I think it was a wake-up call in terms of the speed at which Notre Dame wants to play at. This is a team, and Kark mentioned it in their ensuing game, the Cavanaughs need chaos. You know, the Cavanaughs in 6-on-6, they're really good players, but, man, you let them ride, you put the ball on the ground, you create extra mans, you create non-ordinary situations, and they're elite. That extra man is cooking right now. They're 13 of 17. Notre Dame's 13 of 17 on the extra man. Taylor's in the middle. He's the hub guy. They bring in Jeffrey Riccardelli, and they're so comfortable. Dobson's an outside threat, so that stretches the D. I think, and I wrote about it in my poll on Monday, which that you can find at laxallstars.com, I think you can't play this group straight up. You know, like if you play this group straight up, they're so comfortable. They know their skip lanes. They know the body language. The Cavanaughs know each other so well. This is a group that basically returns intact from last year with Taylor on the inside. So dangerous. I think you got to junk it up. I think you got to shut somebody off. I think you got to rotate hard. I think you got to throw different looks at them. You got to do something to make them uncomfortable, because if you don't, they're going to click 13 out of 17 times.
Yeah. And I think you made a great point, because Michigan in very much the same way at this point in the season is not most comfortable in a settled 6v6 on offense. They would prefer chaos and fast play on offense as well. Michael Boehm, Ryan Cohen, as you've covered in the past, those are guys that similarly love the chaos. They love to do transition. They love that. 6-on-6, that's when things slow down and it gets a little bit more complicated. But so it'll be interesting that's the thing that both teams want, right? That's their specialty. Now, I agree with you, and I think this is the most talented defensive unit Michigan has had probably in program history, just with the guys that they've brought in. But I will say, I don't know where that comes. I mean, because outside of Roberts really pressing hands, I mean, they're still out Ryan Shriver. You know, Rowan Clay and the contingent at LSM has been good, but I don't know who is going to be able to, you know, we're asking three or four guys to have the games of their lives against that Notre Dame unit. So I don't know where that comes from. So I'm interested to see what the scheme is. Against Harvard, they were very much slow to slide, and it really bit them early. And over the course of the game, that was adapted, that changed. But if they're slow to slide against Notre Dame, I mean, it could get ugly.
I think you've got to defend tendencies against Notre Dame. The question is, do you pull Dobson or do you short him? We've seen teams use different strategies. Jordan Faison, the freshman midfielder, football player for Notre Dame, can beat you off the dribble. His shooting, while his numbers are pretty strong, that's probably a guy you probably want to shoot. And then Devin McLean seems to be growing in his confidence and his role. The transfer from Brown. Again, Notre Dame, Duke, and Michigan are three teams that benefited the most with the transfer portal because they have one-year graduate programs. And so all three programs just loaded guys in. But Devin McLean looked great last week. And then, of course, you got the Kavanaughs. So it's an interesting game. So there's one side of you, I think, that senses chaos and an up-and-down tempo. But then I also hear that you think this game could bog down and be a half field. What do you sense in terms of tempo?
I think both coaches want chaos on offense and tempo, and then they both are going to work to slow things down on their own defensive end.
Doesn't defense dictate tempo?
No, 100%. I mean, it's between what the offense wants and what the defense is giving them, right? And I think the defense is going to give them, hey, we're going to do everything we can to slow things down. Whether that be in the ride, whether that be in, you know, being less aggressive late in the shot clock and really getting back and setting, you know, kind of conceding offensive possessions instead of trying to force things late and be out of position. You know, we could see 10-man, which we haven't seen a lot of yet out of Michigan. I mean, it's a staple of the program. It has been since the JP days. So I think we could see a lot. I think this is a game where if you're Michigan, you throw everything you have at it. And if you're Notre Dame, it's the same thing, because then they have 2 weeks off before they play the ACC schedule. So yeah, I think very much like they're going to leave it all out on the field, obviously. And it's cliche to say. But yeah, I think both defensive schemes are going to be about slowing things down, and both offenses are going to try to not let that happen.
Anything in the specialties? Will Lynch, the faceoff man, who's a junior from Rockville Center, to town adjacent from the town that I grew up in. My mom actually grew up in Rockville Center. Will Lynch would have gone to Southside. Instead, I believe he went to Chaminade. But he was only 50% last year. Okay, he had a decent year. He has ratcheted up his percentage this year. He has become one of the top faceoff guys in the country, one of the most improved players in the nation. Justin Wiefeld for Michigan now as kind of the solo Fogo, with Nick Rowlett now being in the PLL. Mm-hmm. We felt 65% a year ago, really strong. That'll be interesting. I think the goalie battle favors Notre Dame going in. You never know how these things are going to play out. Liam Entenmann, Hunter Taylor, the sophomore from Landon, he's solid as a rock as well. Anything in specialties to jump out at you?
Yeah, I was just looking up here the matchup from last year, because I'll tell you, last year I was not impressed with Will Lynch. I mean, Michigan obviously going 21 for 30 last year's matchup. And I'm trying to see the individual one here. Will Lynch.
That was a huge area of vulnerability last year for Notre Dame that they ultimately overcame. Colin Hagstrom gave them some runs. Donovan. Yeah. Their wing play was outstanding, and they mucked it up. You know, they scrapped their way to 45 to 50%, and then they earned their extra possessions and ridebacks with the Kavanaughs.
Will Lynch was 2 for 13 last year. So this year, I was surprised.
Yeah, he's winning faceoffs this year, which is kind of like this bonanza for Coach Corrigan.
Yeah, I think whatever he did in the offseason, it's worked, right? Because this was a team last year where I was like, these faceoff guys are kind of irrelevant. Like, they threw out four different players last year against Michigan. And it was Colin Hagstrom that won 7 for 14. And Will Lynch was 2 for 13. And Justin Wiefeld played a lot in that game. So I still think that the edge goes to Michigan there. But I do think possibly wing play, the pressure that the Notre Dame attack will put on every faceoff if you win it backwards, Those are all very important factors. So, you know, winning the clamping in the ball out is one thing against Notre Dame, but actually turning that into an offensive possession is another. Now, obviously, Entman against a sophomore, Entman being one of the best goalies in the country, Hunter Taylor's no slouch, but he's a guy that definitely needs the defense's help to get that confidence up. I mean, he can make some incredible saves. He's great in the clear. But if the defense hangs him out to dry, I mean, there's a lot of times where I find myself calling a Michigan game and saying, you know, the defense is not doing Hunter Taylor any promises here. They're not helping him right now. There are a few times where I say, you know, that's one that he has to have, but he's very much, in my opinion, he's in the top half of the country when it comes to goaltenders as a sophomore, but a little bit less consistent than an Entman, for sure.
Let's finish up with some prognostications. Let's make a line for this game. Let's me and you make the Vegas line right now. I got Notre Dame. The first thing I wrote down was Notre Dame should be favored by 3.5, maybe 4.5. Your thoughts on that?
Man, that's tough because too Michigan much. Michigan's coming off a loss. You know, I'm just trying
I think
to
three
see.
And a half is a fair number.
I don't think you're wrong by any means. I think it's fair, right? It's definitely fair. I think 4.5 is probably more likely. I think 3.5 is probably what Vegas will give it.
4.5 is a lot.
It feels like a lot, right? But when you think
and
about
the total.
Total. Yeah.
I got 26.5, like a 14, 13, 27.5 maybe. These teams can score, but again, there are times that Notre Dame is just going to try to strangle the game and play
right.
slow.
Right.
So 27.5 was kind of where I was leaning.
If I really wanted to get people betting, I would probably throw it at 25.5. And basically, I want to dare people to take the over for the exact reason you just mentioned. I mean, when you look at Michigan this year, right, offensive efficiency is tough against these better teams. So I think scoring is going to be low, at least on one side. Now, it's whether or not they can keep the Notre Dame scoring low as well.
Interesting. Anything rivalry-wise here? You know, like these are two big-name programs from the Midwest. Like, when I think of Michigan-Notre Dame, I think about big-time football games.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, when you think of athletics in general, it's two blue-blood programs, right, and two Midwest programs. I don't think there's enough history there between the two programs on the lacrosse field to be anything other than, yeah, we hate Notre Dame as a school. I don't think there's something lacrosse specific yet, but, you know, if this is a continuous matchup from year to year, I think that's something that both, I think it's good for lacrosse if Michigan Notre Dame happens every year. So I think this is a budding rivalry, especially with Michigan kind of being now consistently ranked for the last two seasons. You know, they've been in and out of the rankings before, but this is the first time after that run last year where people look at them very differently going into this season. So I think it's good for the sport. I think it's a budding rivalry, but I don't think there's anything to pull on quite yet.
Dr. Nick Z has been our guest. He is the analyst and play-by-play voice of the Michigan Wolverines. What's your next TV gig?
I mean, right now we're kind of done. Every game is either it's all linear or ESPN Plus for away games. So
it's all BTN or ESPN Plus. Wow.
Yeah. As far as I know, all the games got picked up. So you'll probably have a couple.
Any on the women's side?
No, not this season. The problem with the women's schedule is that they play a lot of Sundays. And so Sundays for me is a family day. I give myself to lacrosse 6 days a week.
Dr. Nick Z gives himself to Lax All-Stars, I'll tell you, 7 days a week. he is held up, and he is one of the reasons so helpful in getting that Monday poll out and this podcast. So Dr. Nick Z, always appreciated. You're the behind-the-scenes star of all of this. Thank you for your time today, and look forward to us continuing this for the rest of the spring.
Yeah, enjoy South Bend, Quint. I look forward to listening to it.
I get to do the game from home. It's a live from home.
I thought they were getting rid of that this year.
The fans can hear this. So Friday night, I'm at Johns Hopkins Navy, which is a 15-minute drive from my house. Saturday, I'm live from my office at 2 o'clock, Michigan Notre Dame. I mean, how great is that?
You just have two games in one weekend. You have the full setup still?
And no travel. Yeah, I got the full setup. It'll only be the second home from live from home game. And again, it's not – they're very hard to do. It's a different feel, obviously, from not being on site. The good news is I've had Michigan once, and I've had Notre Dame once. So that helps dramatically when you're live from home.
I got to imagine the hardest thing is the cues with your broadcast partner, not knowing. Well,
we can see each other, and I don't find that to be a problem. I think the riding and clearing and any
the full field stuff.
Full field stuff, and then injuries or performance. When guys disappear, usually I'm at a game, I can look down on the sideline, and I see, oh, he's fixing his stick. Oh, he's getting his ankle taped. Oh, he's getting yelled at by the coach and he just got benched. But when a live from home game, when guys disappear, you have no idea why.
Yeah, you need a spotter on site.
You could be taking a dump in the bathroom. I don't know.
You need a spotter. You need a friend. You know, it's funny when we do the Big Ten games, Coach John Paul will occasionally text me and say, hey, just so you know, the audio is like slightly imbalanced, and then we'll just turn the dial ourselves and fix it. So you need that spotter on site that can kind of give you the heads up, like, hey, just so you know, so-and-so is not doing something right now.
If we ever get to a point where we are broadcasting gigantic championship or playoff games live from home, you're my guy with the binocs. You're from Michigan. Good. You know how to use those binoculars and find your way into arenas.
Fair enough. National champions, all I gotta say.
Thanks, Dr. Zeke.
Today's episode is brought to you in partnership with Spire Lacrosse. Spire's world-class high school and post-grad lacrosse programs are ideal for serious lacrosse players looking for an intense training environment to prepare for the next level of competition. The academies provide student-athletes the chance to study, train, and compete in world-class athletic and academic facilities while seeking the best possible college scholarship opportunities. I've got Hopkins hosting Navy on Friday. 7 o'clock ESPN Plus. I'll be joined by Sheehan Stanwyck Birch. Up top, Adam Coppinger is our producer. And being a Friday game, it'll kind of set the tone for the entire weekend. Hopkins coming off that loss in Charlotte to Syracuse. You know, the Jays played three consecutive road games. They were trying to bounce back off that win in Charlottesville against Virginia and showed up a little flat. I thought Syracuse wanted and needed that game more. The faceoff disparity in that game really favored Cuse. Orange had 10 extra possessions. So be interested to see what you get from Logan Callahan and Tyler Dunn, Hopkins face-off specialists. You know, this is a rivalry that hits close to me. My older brother, Pace, went to Navy, went off to the Naval Academy when I was in fifth grade. So I ran around in middle school wearing Navy gear, went to a handful of their games, loved their players. They treated me so well. And so, my dream was to play at Navy. Brian Matthews and the Navy coaching staff when I was in high school didn't really recruit me much. And it turned out that Army and Jack Emmer showed a lot more interest. And so my final choices came down to Army, Johns Hopkins, and Virginia after some thought about going to a place like Brown, Princeton, or Harvard. But turning back to this game, again, this game for me was always special. My brother went to Navy, so anytime we played Navy, it was a big deal, and I especially loved going down to Navy Marine Corps Stadium. Back in the day, the best grass surface by far, very goalie-friendly, beautiful, beautiful blades of grass, summer green, back when Route 97 didn't exist, and so you had to take the back way to Navy. And so driving down to Annapolis was a little more of an endeavor and took you through some towns on the way that was always enjoyable and kind of it was a harbinger of spring. You know, where this game fits on the schedule, you're starting to see some color.
The tulips are starting to come out of the earth. The grass is waking up, and this game always meant that spring is right here. For Hopkins, you know, there's good and there's bad. You know, Russell Melendez on offense, I think, needs to pick it up a notch. They have such great depth of midfield. I don't worry about that at all. I think where they have been towing a dangerous area is on close defense. They just do not rotate very many people. And when Syracuse had that face-off advantage last week, I kind of felt like their defense looked a little tired. The best individual matchup in this Navy-Hopkins game is going to be Scott Smith covering Xavier Arline. Xavier Arline, the right-handed attackman, former quarterback for Navy, really, really fast and explosive in his moves, especially up the right-handed side. Better shooter on the run than he is a feeder on the run. Navy has some deep shooters in Max Hewitt, and Dane Swanson in particular, 28, can let it rip from the outside, coming off a big game two back. Watching Navy on tape against Lehigh, they were not good. They were very sloppy in the first half. First quarter, committing 6 turnovers. They were up in that game, but the offense just looked disjointed. Two players that stood out, I think, for Navy, freshman A.J. Marsh at the LSM position, and then Jackson Bonnet's a close defense. You would think that Bonnet's will cover Jacob Angelus, and you'll think that Marsh, his work on faceoff wings, will be extremely important. Zach Hayashi is a freshman Fogel from McDonough. A.J. Marsh, a freshman on the wings for Navy. So, you know, Navy's in a situation where they got to win. This is a team that has had high expectations based on recruiting rankings. They're building a new facility at the Naval Academy. And when you're sitting there and you're struggling around 500 and your arch rival, Army, is ranked number one in the country, I think that's a little incentive and impetus to push a little harder. So Hopkins back in action Friday night. Sheen and I will have the call up top. This rivalry dates back to I got the research, like early 1900s. The other good games this weekend that have my attention, I mentioned Army. They play Lehigh Saturday at noon. We'll see how Army reacts to being the number one team in the country. The Ivy League kicks off league play this weekend, Harvard and Yale on ESPN Plus at 1 o'clock. That's going to be a great game. Okay. If you're in the area, that's a game that's a can't miss game. Get some pizza and head out to Yale to watch that game. Duke and Richmond also play at 1. Richmond's played a very, very difficult schedule. They've come up short against all the top tier teams. Maybe this is a time they can sneak up and take down Duke. We'll see. Saturday, 2 o'clock, ACC Network is Michigan Notre Dame. And then Sunday, a great game. It's a standalone game at 2 o'clock on ESPNU. Cornell and Princeton. Again, the Ivy League regular season now starting. It's a league that looks like it's wide open. Kind of throw out Dartmouth and Brown, and then I think everyone else has a shot. Harvard, Yale, Cornell, Princeton, and Penn. And Cornell-Princeton, you go back and watch that game from a year ago, and it was off the charts cool. These two teams can score. I have questions about Cornell's defense, but let me tell you, the Big Red have a great offense. C.J. Kirst, Willem Firth, Michael Long, and Princeton, of course, with their young attack, Kabiri and Coulter Mackesy are about as dangerous as anyone. So I expect fireworks. That game will be really fun to watch. It should be free-flowing and offensive-minded. Again, that's Sunday 2 ESPNU Ivy League action. So as we wrap up non-conference play, these non-conference games really are super important. Maryland, Virginia, super important. Michigan, Notre Dame, super important. So anytime a Big Ten team's playing an ACC team or playing an Ivy team, it's really going to count for a lot when it comes down to Selection Sunday, which I believe is Sunday, May 5th. I'm excited for the doubleheader weekend. I'm coming off a weekend that saw me in Tulsa for the Big 12 Championships in wrestling. Next weekend, I get to go to Kansas City and cover the NCAA Championships. I think my 20th for ESPN. We're on ESPN the 3 evenings. The championships are Saturday night on ESPN. And always just an incredible, incredible competition with just amazing young student athletes. I come back from that event enriched and inspired every year. So I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. There's some good action. Again, it's ESPN Plus. There's so many games on ESPN Plus that if I went over them, it would take about an hour. Women's games, men's games. You got to have it. It's the best invention to hit lacrosse since the plastic stick.
Let's take a look at the top 20 brought to you by Spire Institute. Army right now, undefeated, number one ranked team in the country for the first time in program history. This is a program that has won national championships pre-NCAA. They're going to be favored in every remaining game this season. We'll see how it shakes out. Right now, their strength of schedule is ranked number 38 in the country. You'd think that if someone out of the ACC, a Notre Dame or Virginia or Duke, would run the table the rest of the way, they would leapfrog Army. Worst case scenario, if Army runs the table and gets undefeated, I see them as a 1, 2, or 3 seed, potentially avoiding an early pairing in the playoffs with Notre Dame, Virginia, or Duke, which could ease the way to a Black Knight appearance in championship weekend, which would be the first time since 1984. Notre Dame is currently ranked number 2 in the Inside Lacrosse media poll. They're 4-1. I thought they really bounced back off of that Georgetown loss and showed unique ferocity. This is a team that needs to play with their hair on fire to create chaotic moments in a game where Chris and Pat Kavanaugh can thrive. Virginia's number 3. They're 5-1. I've seen the Cavs twice. I've called 2 of their games thus far. I love their attack. Their defense is super long. Jurassic Park, 6'7". Kastner. Schroeder, 6'6". 6'5". George Fulton. Middle of the field question marks. First midfield is okay. Jack Boyden's done nice work around the net. Griffin Schutz, I thought, broke out 2 weeks ago. And Ryan Coles, he's a lefty. He's young, second year in the program. I think he redshirted last year. He's been good. I thought against Richmond, he played a really strong game. But there's been no second midfield scoring. The faceoff situation has been muddled up with injuries. Virginia's short sticks on defense are good, but this is a team that doesn't want to slide, and they've had some issues off ball covering cutters. So still very much a work in progress. Their bench depth has clouded some wins that should have been by like 7, 8, 9, 10 goals, and they've subbed their subs in, and it's gotten ugly late where other teams have encroached into their margin. So don't believe the box scores when you look at some of those scores. Just know that Virginia, in terms of second midfield, subs on attack, it just hasn't been pretty. Duke is 6-1. They're going to be in the top 5 in everyone's poll. Offense right now, the number one scoring group in the country. Josh Sawada has really fit in well with Dyson Williams and Brennan O'Neill. Their loss earlier in the year to Penn in the rain, mostly to do with middle of the field issues, clearing and faceoffs. This is a Duke team. Offensive efficiency, even in that game, when you break down the numbers, their half court numbers turned out to be okay, aided by the great play of Aiden Denenza in the fourth quarter. I'd still like to see Duke run more of their offense through Brendan O'Neill. Okay, you think about basketball, the NBA. You got to get your best player touches every possession. He's going to dictate everything. He's going to dictate matchups. He's going to draw double teams. He's going to make everyone else's job super easy. You know, at times I remember seeing this when Michael Sowers was at Duke. Like, Duke holds back Duke's best players too often. And I think everything needs to start with Brendan O'Neill. Again, not that this team is not playing great offense, because they are. I just think it can be even more dangerous. Maryland comes in next in the Inside Lacrosse poll. They're 5-1 on the year. They've been an up and down team. You know, last week, a bizarre subpar performance, nearly losing a game, had to go to overtime to beat winless Brown at home in the rain. Luke Weirman did not play in that game. Goalie Logan McNaney has been struggling lately. Braden Erksa had a breakout game on offense. He's super fast and he got things done. But Maryland's really getting no bench scoring. Their transition game has not been as dynamic as in years past when Maryland thrived in that trailer break situation. They're great from going from defense to offense. On a clean save by Logan, they break out, and their shorties and their poles are a big part of the offense. Cuse comes in next at 6-2, and wow, they needed that win over Johns Hopkins. That was a season-saving win after one-goal losses to Army and Maryland. Because Syracuse still plays Cornell, and they still have to run the ACC gauntlet, that was just gigantic in terms of any kind of postseason resume. Hopkins can be ranked, I believe, anywhere from 7 to 9 in terms of fairness. At 5-2 right now, they've played
an extremely difficult early season schedule. They had three straight road games. The loss in Charlotte to Cuse was subpar from an energy standpoint, so I expect to see them bounce back on Friday night at home against Navy. They'll get to enjoy Saturday off and then start Big Ten conference play. Denver. Denver goes from 1-8 with a loss to Yale. You know, it'd be interesting to see. Denver was subpar facing off in that game against Yale, which with Alex Stathakis, it's not what you expect. Denver's sitting pretty, though. They still have wins over Johns Hopkins and Cornell, and they'll square off in the Big East ultimately against Georgetown. It looks to be those two seem to be head and shoulders above the rest of the field. Penn State's won five straight. Remember, you go back to week one, they lost to Colgate. They've been dealing with some defensive issues, but man, TJ Malone, their goalie Jack Frassion, their clearing game was much better last week, and they demolished Cornell 20-9. They cleared 20 of 21, and this is a team that's been struggling in the middle of the field. Again, they were a semifinalist last year. They bring back the vast majority of this roster. They got a coach, Jeff Tambroni, who's been there, done that. I like this Penn State team now as Big Ten play starts. Yale was just a big win on Sunday night. Yale's 3-1. Yale, too, has been dealing with the injuries to Leo Johnson and Chris Lyons on attack. Matt Brandau's been unbelievable. I think you look at they're getting a little more out of Patrick Hackler now as a two-way midfielder. And then down low defensively, Jack Stusen and Pisano, the youngster on defense, these guys are causing all sorts of turnovers. So Yale's in a good spot right now, considering their schedule. That was just a huge win. Teams like Georgetown, Harvard, and Princeton are in the next grouping. Georgetown holding that win over Notre Dame in South Bend, a game I covered in person. Thought they executed just such a smart game plan, tightened up their defense. They got a really talented young freshman goalie from Birmingham, Alabama. Anderson Morris from Birmingham, Alabama, which is quite amazing. Now, Georgetown was off this weekend. They have a goofy schedule in that they've got some grad students who have to travel abroad during the season. Rarely will you see a team take a week off and players have to travel for academic responsibilities, but that's the case. So Kevin Warren has to sit chilly for a while. Harvard's undefeated, 6-0. Jerry Burns done a wonderful job. Again, talking to Dr. Z, I said, what stands out on tape is that Harvard plays hard and they have great players in Sam King, Teddy Malone, Greg Campisi. You know, with Jerry Byrne, their head coach, their defensive scheme is going to be buttoned up. But I just love the tempo and the pace they're playing with and the energy. Princeton's 4-2, Penn's 4-2, Cornell's 3-2. Man, we are sitting on such an exciting Ivy League season where every game's going to be huge, both internally in the conference standings and externally for the NCAA tournament. The number one seed in the Ivy, whoever wins the regular season championship, will host the Ivy League tournament in that first weekend in the month of May. And it could this league could go in a lot of different directions. I mean, to me, Penn has the best defense in the league. Emmett Carroll's a great goalie. I love the work of Brendan Lavelle at close defense. Cornell may have the best offense in the league. They can roll all sorts of guys at you offensively. Michael Long, CJ Kirst, Willem Firth. They've got Aiden Blake playing midfield. They got Hugh Kelleher. Cornell is loaded offensively. Their issue is going to be faceoffs and defense. And so you get these one-sided teams. You know, I love Penn's defense. I love Cornell's offense. So whoever gets the ball, if Cornell gets the ball and they're fed possessions, they're going to win games. If Penn can shut you down defensively, they're going to win games. Really interesting to try to predict and try to look ahead to what should be a fabulous Ivy League regular season. North Carolina, 4-2. The Heels, big win 2 weekends ago on that Sunday game. Carolina's schedule, you know, I got to tell you, it's just bizarre. They play the top tier, but there's not many middle tier teams they play. And they've already lost to Princeton, and they've already lost to Johns Hopkins. They play Army, and they host Army later on in the season. And then they play a lot of teams that are not going to help their strength of schedule. Teams like Wagner, teams like Hofstra. They played Fairfield. They played Mercer. I just don't get it. If you study how the RPI is created, you cannot play teams with bad records. That's what Carolina has done. Their SOS is number 18 in the country. They're ranked 16th in the country. They're going to have to win some games in the ACC tournament in order to qualify for the NCAAs. I believe Richmond is better than number 17 in the country. They're 4-2. They've lost some close games to Maryland. They challenge themselves out of conference, and they clearly are the team to beat in their league. Michigan comes in at 18-5-2. A loss last week to Harvard. They're on TV on Saturday. We talked about it quite a bit in this podcast. Rutgers comes in the media poll at 19. I don't see it. Rutgers' schedule is abysmal. Delaware comes in at 20 at 3-2. Delaware is pretty tough, but I gave those last two spots to Ohio State and Quinnipiac, who's undefeated right now. Quinnipiac's got some decent wins, too. They beat Bryant. They beat St. John's. They beat Brown. Other teams scrambling outside the top 20, Colgate. Colgate beat Penn State. New Jersey Institute of Technology, we had Eric Wolf. Check out that podcast. Eric Wolf couldn't have been more impressive. I was blown away by Eric Wolf. That is a guy who's working his way up the coaching ladder. And when Scott Maher decides to retire at Albany, the first guy I'm calling is Eric Wolf. Eric Wolf, I couldn't have been more impressed. Villanova hovering. Bryant, I saw talent on tape. They just can't seem to win some of these key games. And then Towson. You know, Towson's had a nice year. They beat Navy. They've played tight with some good teams. And then Greg Cannella has UMass just outside the top 20. That is seems like it's a yearly occurrence and in a league that should be fantastic to watch. So as the middle of March hits, this is the last week. This is really the last week of non-conference play, and these games mean a lot. Anytime, as I said, ACC, Big Ten, Big Ten Ivy, those three leagues, they play each other. The implications will cascade into May. Hope you enjoyed this edition. Travel safe this weekend if you're heading to a game. As the weather perks up, let's try to get some more fans at these games. I just generally feel that this season's had incredible excitement. The play on the field has never been better. The players deserve a lot of credit. They are skilled. They're more athletic. The rules have aligned with a more offensive game, and I think it's all positive. So hope you enjoyed this podcast. Appreciate that you listen. Again, any feedback, it's quint.kesnick@espn.com. And tell a friend. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into today's show. You can contact me at quint.kesnick@espn.com with any feedback or guest ideas. And a special thank you to all our sponsors, including today's presenting sponsor, Spire Lacrosse.